Welcome, and thank you for joining us for Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Benefits and Insurance Professionals.
And I'm your host, David Saltzman. Today on this episode of Healthcare Happy Hour, we are pleased to have with us NABIP's president, Susan Ryder, for kind of a mid-year check-in. Hi, Susan, how you doing?
I'm great, Dave. How are you?
I'm just, if I were any better, I'd be twins. So that's pretty scary. We got a lot to cover, and there are a lot of really cool, interesting things going on and on the drawing board. And this would be a great opportunity for us to make sure that everybody knows all about them and they can, you know, raise their hand and help with any of them if they want. So let's start right away. One of the things that we've recognized for a while and that you and the board recognized is that our industry has become really fragmented. There's folks doing Medicare, there's folks doing small group, there's folks doing self-funded, although unlike my time in the trenches, those two things sometimes overlap. I remember back in the day, if you asked for a quote to a stop-loss carrier for fewer than 300 people, they'd laugh at you. So the times have changed, and that's given rise to an opportunity and I think a challenge. How do we meet each member and create a journey for them that's relevant to what they want to do?
Yeah, so great question. So as part of Vision 2030, the Board of Trustees is in a multi-phase process. But most recently, we did survey our membership. And so what we're working on behind the scenes, of course, big vision, right? Not everything will happen tomorrow, but creating a, as you described it well, a journey. So if I'm someone that specializes in the individual space, the communications that I receive, the opportunities for professional development, the advocacy requests, those will all be targeted to my specialty unless I say I want something in a different area, because we do have those members where they're a little bit more diversified. Same thing goes for Medicare, large group, small group. So again, trying to meet our people where they are versus our people meeting us where we are.
Well, and it's kind of also creating an elevated member experience, which is nice. It's to say, yes, we recognize that you're special, but you can have all this other stuff if you want it also. So that's kind of cool. One of the things in a volunteer organization is, you know, it requires engagement. And engagement is very different than just membership. And you know, we'll always have both, but you've emphasized the importance of engagement. What does that look like to you?
Yeah, so I think engagement is different depending upon the individual. So, you know, there are people that really enjoy leadership opportunities or even serving on committees and councils, and we have opportunities for those. And by the way, those applications will open up in the spring to begin for the next term, July 1st. But then there's other folks that prefer really just to do things among their own local chapter or their state chapter, and that's fine too. There's lots of ways that everyone can get involved. I think from an advocacy perspective, there's opportunity for everyone. And right now we're collecting stories from the people that we serve. And so that could be an employer for the group space. That could be an individual or a family in the individual or Medicare side. And those stories are what we use when we're trying to enhance, change, or even establish legislation on the Hill. They're asking for stories from their constituents.
Stories have been a mainstay of my marketing practice for 15 years, and they are still the most effective way of engaging people. So we're looking at a different generation than when I joined the association 40 years ago. The internet hadn't been invented yet. We had these really cool things called listservs and dial-up modems, and we thought we were really cool. But the newer generations or the younger generations are looking for different things from an association than folks my age were. How do we reach those folks? What do we give chapters to do to reach out to those folks to try to build up their membership?
Yeah, so we're exploring all different types of tools and resources. And one of the things that we have, again, big picture, is to do a big technology overhaul, but that takes funds. And so through the Office of Transformation, we are working on a capital campaign. It's in its infancy, so more information to come in the future. But this will really help us ensure that we are future ready to meet the generations where they are. So in the future, that could be text messaging, right? Because that's how this new generation likes to be communicated with. They don't want to go out to a website as often. A lot of times people unsubscribe to our emails, which is one of our main methods of communication. And so just exploring, doing stakeholder meetings to really figure out what everyone needs, especially right now when we have five generations, hard to believe,
five generations
in our membership. And it's really exciting and it's really challenging at the same time because we can't be all things to everybody.
No, but we're an association that's rapidly closing in on it being 100 years old, just another couple of years away. And, you know, a lot of things have changed over the course of time. But one of the things that's the big mover right now is AI. How can we harness AI to provide a better member experience?
So we are actually starting to use AI behind the scenes at NABIP. The board is using a tool called Airtable, and there's some AI components built into that. And the next phase is going to be releasing some Airtable tools to our chapter leaders. And so they will have access to those tools. And of course, we're not going to just deploy them and hope everyone figures it out. There's going to be training and things along the way. So we're exploring ways in which we can have chatbots and different things to help our members 24/7.
You know, it's interesting. I'm going to move the conversation from AI backwards.
Yeah.
We have what those of us who are writers call a dead tree magazine. And people look forward to getting it every month. They know there's been a lot of changes with the magazine. What are the goals behind the redesign? And how does the magazine fit into that larger strategy of educating and informing members?
Yeah, so of course, any magazine has a lot of cost associated with it. So we do rely on a lot of sponsorships. That gives visibility to those that provide us some additional funding in order to produce what everyone likes. But what we had to do, which was a really hard decision, was to move it from a monthly edition to a quarterly edition. We also heard feedback from folks that they wanted to hear more broad topics. And so we're trying to bring in industry experts that write, different things that appeal to different audiences, different generations, different specialties, and keeping things, you know, somewhat the same. But you probably notice the cover looks dramatically different. You probably have received the flip book that's associated with it so that people who like technology better can flip through it online, find the articles they want, and then also really trying to keep people informed of what's going on in the marketplace, things that maybe they're not thinking about that helps them, again, with that diversification of knowledge, because our clients are expecting us to know at least a little bit about everything right now.
That's true. And, you know, we're being expected out in the field to do more and more with less and less. We've had a number of rounds of commission compression. And I think that's probably the most charitable way of talking about what's been going on. And, you know, I see a time where there might be other modes of advisors being paid different ways and whatnot, but it's all part of that wave of change that's coming. And we've got to keep people, and as you said earlier, meet them where they are. Mm-hmm. And so for some people, that magazine is a great thing and quarterly is the perfect timing. Whereas if I get one more unsolicited email in my email box, I'm going to jump off the roof. So, you know, I understand. One of the things that I know you've been looking at also is career pathing, otherwise known as professional development. Mm-hmm. What does an ideal career path look like for a new or emerging advisor?
Yeah, so if we back up just a moment, one of the things that we're doing first starts on the membership level. So we've added two new levels of membership. One is for students. So similar to other associations across the country, like SHRM, for example, which is for human resource professionals, we've added a student level membership. Additionally, we've created a level of membership for those that are within their first 5 years in our industry, because we recognize that when you're new to the industry, you need time to build that book of business. And financially, one more membership can really cause a wrinkle in your financial structure.
Yeah, it's tough when you're first starting out. It's, you know, we tell folks, you know, I've been involved in training agents, and one of the things that you tell them is that you're ridiculously underpaid at the beginning of your career and you're ridiculously overpaid at the end of your career. And you just have to make it through that process. And, you know, it is a lot to swallow. Where do you see the biggest opportunities to expand our current professional development opportunities?
Yeah, so what we're looking for right now are subject matter experts who are willing to donate their time to help us create curriculum. So over the last few years, we've had members that stepped up to create a PBM course. So that's for pharmacy benefit management, for those that are unfamiliar with that term. We've had members that have stepped up to help create an ICRA course. You know, so that is really more on the individual, but small group too, right? Or even large groups, because we're starting to see even health systems offer ICRAs going forward as a cost containment measure. So really keeping up with the trends, and as people are willing to donate their time, their expertise, that's really how curriculum gets built. And then, of course, always refreshing our certification courses to make sure that they remain relevant for the current market.
Well, and going beyond the certification course is a great way to start talking about designations. I know that you all have been thinking about some new credentialing and some new designations. What would you like to see us introduce?
Yeah, so we've addressed the Medicare space, right? We have our Medicare certification. We have our REBC, which is really more for the group space. So I would like to see something for the individual market, personally. And I think that gives us some opportunities to make things more appealing to those folks. We do have, it's pretty remarkable, right? We have an individual working group and they're working on lots of things from a policy and legislative perspective. And so it would be nice to take things that we're working on and create course content to help, you know, further the education and knowledge that people need.
Well, and, you know, there's always going to be changing. You talk about the individual market right now. You know, whatever Congress may or may not do with those subsidies or with ACA in general, that's going to be a whole new wrinkle for the individual marketplace. And, you know, I think the carriers will take lessons that they've learned along the way. I remember the first couple of years of ACA was really rough for pricing and whatnot, and also how to deal with adverse selection and all of those kinds of things. But it's going to be another ripple in our pond. And we've got to be able to understand the fundamentals before we can actually deal with the ripples that come along. So I think that's a great idea. Do you think that professional designations help advisors stand out in a competitive sense?
Personally, I'm a lifelong learner, and I used to be the National Professional Development Chair, so it's near and dear to my heart. And I do believe it's important to continually challenge ourselves and to learn more. So my personal opinion is yes. Other people might not think so. I guess, you know, time will tell. But always in my bio, people talk about, why do you have so many letters after your name? And I tried to explain, well, how can you try to sell a course for NABIP if you don't know what the content is? So I take the course.
Maybe
still
as we
my
go
CE
along.
Requirement too.
Yeah, well, that a twofer. And, you know, maybe as we go along, as we create these designations, we can also create marketing campaigns, both for the public and for within the industry, so that, you know, not only do you get a designation, but you get a way to go tell your clientele or the people in your area that, hey, I'm a little bit different. I've got something in addition to what these other folks have. And, you know, in my practice, the question I get all the time is, how do we differentiate ourselves? Well, that's a great way to differentiate yourself. But it's hard for members to know automatically how to talk about that. So that would be a really cool thing. Broadening the lens a little bit, what kind of academic or professional partnerships do you think would be most valuable to NABIP memberships? I know that's something else that you guys are talking about.
Yeah, so we have a couple chapters across the country that are working on some apprentice programs where they are working with their local universities to inspire the next generation to go into insurance. You know, I don't know about you, but when I went to college, I didn't say, oh, I want to be an insurance agent when I grow up. I actually thought that I would work in the medical field for my whole career. And then suddenly I had, you know, an event that changed my trajectory. And so I went into benefits and human resources. So, But I do think it's really important for the future of our country and for the future of our industry to make sure that we are mentoring and nurturing folks that are going into risk management programs or other programs, even HR, right? Because within human resources, there are people that specialize in employee benefits, for example. And so figuring out how we can meet those folks. You know, some of our members might not realize that on the SHRM website, the behind the scenes search for a broker tool is actually our find an agent tool. So there are benefits to being a member of NABIP.
Well, and you know, it would not hurt, especially for folks who are in the group market, to learn more about HR stuff, because oftentimes the path to a yes for a sale goes through the HR department, at least partially, if not wholly. So, and those are the folks who are going to be the feet on the street, as it will, once you implement a case, once you enroll folks. So, you know, the more you know about what they do, the better it is and the easier it would be to communicate with them, even if you're not going to be an HR professional. So I think that's awesome. We often talk about being a trusted advisor for our clients. What does it mean for our association to be a trusted voice in today's healthcare and benefits landscape?
Yeah, so the vision of the association is to be the association that is leading from the front. And what I mean by that is that our vision is that when something comes up in the healthcare policy space, that those not only who are working on the regulatory side, but also those on the congressional or senatorial side, that they come to us. Or other associations come to us when there are things that we have common goals with. So for instance, we've had some conversations recently with NAFA, with HAFA, with NAPIO, which is for the National Association for PEOs, to figure out when are the right times for us to go in together. And most recently, we signed on to a comment letter, you know, that was joint with multiple associations. So finding those opportunities where we can leverage our expertise, but also spread the message even wider than just among our membership.
Well, and it's a multiple audience, isn't it? We've got policymakers, we've got employers, and then we've got consumers, and we have to speak differently to each one of those constituencies.
That's right. And I think one thing to probably highlight that maybe some of the members don't know or are unaware of is that our working groups on the Legislative Council have evolved over the years, again, because our membership is so diverse. So for example, we have an individual working group. We have a Medicare working group. We have a pharmacy or PBM working group because there's so much going on. And this year, one of the big wins was that NABIP, for the first time that I can remember, has model PBM legislation in the state of Virginia that other states can use when PBM bills come to fruition. Another example is what Scott Levitt did recently with the Idaho DOI as it relates to things that are going on amongst the carriers and commissions and various things. And now we have six states that have signed on, and I think there are others to follow. So really, really exciting things are happening when we're all willing to roll up our sleeves a little bit and share our knowledge and expertise.
Well, there's loads of opportunity out there, and somebody needs to take on those opportunities, and I'm glad we are. A little while ago, we got a brand new name.
We did.
And we got a snappy new logo, and you know the weeples in the middle of the logo are gone. But we keep talking about modernizing the brand. What does that look like for us, and why is it important?
So one of the things historically that occurred was that we would go to Capitol Hill and it would take 5 to 10 minutes to explain what a health underwriter was. And most of our members were not health underwriters. And as you mentioned at the very beginning of this conversation, we are so diversified that we needed to figure out a path forward. And that first path forward was really to create a name that was more inclusive of all of our members. And so we are now the National Association of Benefit and Insurance Professionals. And that encompasses people that touch health insurance. So it could be a dental carrier, it could be a TPA, it could be a PBM, it could be HR professionals, PEOs. We have all kinds of folks out there, not just agents anymore. And so that was very intentional. The second thing that we did was to hire Jessica Brooks Woods. That was very strategic. And we did that to really elevate our visibility in the market space and, you know, to talk about things in a different way than we had historically. And so these are some forward momentum actions that the association has taken to ensure that we're here for years to come.
And we talked earlier about different generations requiring different things of their associations. Yeah. And one of the things that the younger generations like is both the social aspect of an association, and also they like them to have kind of a mission piece as well. What are we doing in those areas?
Yeah, so let's start with the mission piece, because I'm really excited. Under the leadership of Eric Kohlsdorf and Amanda Bruton, and other members of the foundation. So many members probably don't even know we have a foundation, but our foundation is really our consumer-facing arm, and it is a 501c3. And so we are creating materials in Spanish, for example. So we have an initiative right now going on. It's called CB or CIBI under our foundation, which is helping us communicate with the Hispanic population as phase one, to make sure that we're meeting the consumers that we all serve, either in the individual Medicare or group space, to better understand the healthcare system that we're all navigating in the United States. One conversation you and I have had offline is, you know, sometimes the same word in Spanish, depending upon the country that you're from, has different context. And so we're trying to make sure that we have tools and resources out there, again, to differentiate our members, to bring tools and resources to their clients that will help them thrive.
Yeah, and it's especially important when you're working in an area that's as technical as what we do. And, you know, you and I both see the Kaiser Foundation survey every couple of years. The rate of healthcare literacy hasn't moved, and it's been abysmal for years. And so anything that I think we can do, especially within an employee population, to reach out and try to make sure that folks understand their benefits and know how to use them is a great idea.
You know, Dave, one other thing. So when we talked earlier about some of the member journeys, so we did translate all of our materials into Spanish, but we also created a course around, you know, the cultural awareness around the Hispanic population, again, as phase one. So our members can have materials and they can also have the education.
We also did an interview with folks from Futuro Solilo, which is one of our partners in that initiative. And those benefits today are available, and they've done it great. We did a great job negotiating pricing for our members. And it's something they can take advantage of right now. And, you know, you can go shoot out on the website and find it. So all good stuff. I know one of the other things, as we're kind of running out of time here, but one of the other things that we talked about was having a rapid response media team. And I know we've always worked really hard on being proactive, but sometimes, as we were talking about, like with the changes that may be happening in the individual side of the marketplace, you need to be reactive because they come at you so fast. What's that all about, and how is that going to look as it gets rolled out?
Yeah, so right now, Kelly Lucides, who oversees our marketing and communications team, is putting together a call out. You should have received an email. There's been some social media posts about it, and chapter leaders have also received some customized communications. But we want to make sure that we have folks in every state who are available when someone from TV, radio, newspaper, even other forms of communication, reach out to us and ask for information. They're looking at us and our members as subject matter experts. Craig Gusson is a great example. He's built such a strong relationship in his local media market that they call him all the time, like on a very regular cadence. I used to serve as my state media chair and often called by local media outlets. And they really are last minute. So sometimes they're like, we need to interview someone in the next 3 hours and you need to be able to speak, but you need to speak factually. So we're trying to build that dynamic team, again, making sure that we have folks in every single state.
As that gets built out, do you see that kind of dovetailing with the member journey piece where we'll have subject matter experts in particular areas available in all locales?
I do. And Craig and I actually have talked about building out some education so that people that are not familiar with how to speak to the media really can, they don't have to be an expert in it, but they can at least learn the fundamentals. So there are some new flash pieces, if you will, that are being released in the very near future related to that as well.
Well, and you know, we talk a lot about social proof, and there's nothing better in your community than having them hear you on radio or see your name and your agency name in print, or even better, TV. It immediately differentiates you, and you know, you can always get copies of those recordings and use them in your marketing. So it's one of those kind of 360 things that would be great once we all get it up and running. Well, that's all the time we have for today, but Susan, thank you so much for a really interesting and enlightening conversation.
Thank you so much.
You can have the Healthcare Happy Hour podcast downloaded automatically by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also find a link to the podcast in the member-exclusive Washington Update, published on Fridays. For more information on our government affairs efforts or to become a member, visit nabip.org.